Well, global food price rises have likely only just begun as the UN warns of mass starvation and political instability if Russia doesn't lift its blockade of Ukrainian ports and allow vital grain exports by sea. Even before Russia's invasion, 325 million people were considered food insecure by the World Food Programme. Now millions could be pushed into famine, with WFP chief David Beasley telling the World Economic Forum in Switzerland that Russia is attacking global food security.
Because of this crisis, we're taking food from the hungry to give to the starving. It's absolutely a crisis mode. What do you think is going to happen when you take a nation that normally grows enough food to feed 400 million people and you sideline that? What do you think is going to happen? And so when you add the fuel costs, food costs, shipping costs, it's devastating to not just our operations, but to global food security.
David Beasley from the World Food Programme. Russian food and fertiliser are also affected by the war. That adds to the pressures. And a study by the Eurasia Group earlier this week estimated that 1.9 billion people globally could face food insecurity by November. Well, Julian Cribb is a distinguished science writer and an author of the books Food or War and The Coming Famine, both on the future of the world food supply.
The Ukraine feeds 400 million human beings every single year. I mean, basically, it feeds the whole of Europe, or it feeds the whole of North America. Its major markets are places like China and India, Eastern Europe, the Middle East. So it's a very important source of food. And as of today, its food exports are down by about two-thirds. So if you like, there's 300 million people it normally feeds who aren't getting fed.
And who among those recipients of Ukrainian grain normally is going to miss out first?
Well, the one that we worry about the most is the Middle East, because we know what happened when Ukraine had a drought in 2008 and the shipments didn't come through. A number of Arab countries went into revolution and the Arab Spring arose. Basically, those countries are very fragile, governmentally speaking, and if you take away the food, the populace becomes very unsettled. And that's a factor throughout human history. The French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, all started with famines. So you take away people's food and they tear down the government.
Now, there's talk of getting some of Ukraine's grain out by rail and road. Is that going to beat Russia's blockade at sea?
I doubt it, because you can't move nearly as much grain on a train as you can on a ship. So really, the blockade is a, you know, it's a terrible threat to hundreds of millions of people all around the world. It's an unseen impact of this stupid war.
And Ukraine's grain silos as a result of this are full. So what happens to Ukraine's next harvest, which is due, I think, around August, assuming farmers have been able to sow amidst the war? What would happen to their grain?
Well, either they will have to build new silos or the grain will rot. It'll be lost out of the world food supply, and that will drive up prices for everybody. If that harvest or part of it is lost, the impact of the price will be shown on the Chicago Grain Exchange and things like that. It'll put up the price of bread in Australia, in Britain, in all around the world. The price of wheat, the price of maize, the price of corn, the price of sunflower oil and things like that will go up.
So it's estimated that the world currently has about 10 weeks' worth of grain stored and available. Does that really mean that in about 10 weeks we could start seeing, in the middle of Canberra, Sydney, Washington DC, a struggle to get hold of anything made of grain?
Yeah, typically the world has about 3 months' supply of grain in the pipeline. So we're not at an absolute emergency level just yet, but it'll start to run pretty dry towards the time that the Northern Hemisphere harvest starts to come in. So it'll be replenished in sort of August, September of the year. But there'll be a very dodgy period around about July, August, when world food prices could go up considerably. They're already up. World food prices are now at the highest level they've ever been in human history. Part of that is they're being driven by oil prices because the farmers have to buy fuel and the cost of transporting the food and things like that. So oil is a big factor, but also scarcity is becoming a bigger factor in the price, basically the basic price of bread. So you could see a situation where your supermarket shopping bill nearly doubles if they don't get on top of this situation.
I mean, we're in a real sort of perfect storm, to use that phrase, aren't we? Because we've had COVID disrupting supply chains, now the war in Ukraine, on top of what was already a really big problem in terms of food insecurity, wasn't it?
Yes, there are long-term factors and short-term factors driving the world food insecurity at the moment. I mean, first of all, we're losing soil at 75 billion tonnes a year. That's 1% of the world's farmland is disappearing every single year, even though the population is continuing to grow. Secondly, we're running out of water. Big countries like China, the Indian subcontinent, the western part of the United States are critically short of water now. They've used up their aquifers, they've emptied their dams and things like that. So there is a water crisis on us right now. And two-thirds of the world's fresh water is used to grow food. So if it's not available, it's not going to grow the food. So that's another factor. We're now starting to see a dramatic increase in the amount of drought around the world. Droughts have increased in frequency and intensity by 29% since the year 2000. So it's nearly a third more drought. And the forecast is that something like 129 out of the world's 190 different countries are going to be facing greater drought as climate change accelerates. And the flip side also is floods. Floods also are bad for growing crops. So the big floods that we're seeing in Southeast Asia and elsewhere, they're taking out farmers' crops as well. So climate is exacerbating an already unstable situation. And then on top of that, you've got the war, the oil prices and all those other things.
None of this is fixable in the short term, and there is still considerable intransigence, shall we say, in the world about climate action. So what can we do? What could a country like Australia do, for example, particularly noting we've got a new government?
Well, the best thing we can do is grow more food, and our farmers are going to respond to this. But we won't replace the Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine grows seven times more grain than we do, but we do have some spare capacity in Australia. But we need to move the whole world food system to a much more sustainable basis. We need to go for regenerative agriculture that doesn't destroy soil and water. We need to start producing a lot more food in cities by recycling the nutrients and water that exist in the cities. And we need to start farming the deep oceans because we can produce a hell of a lot of food from the sea if we go about it in the right way. So those are the three big pillars that can sustain the world food supply. But we've got to move on them very, very fast because we're now starting to go into dangerous territory.
Julian Cribb, thank you very much indeed for your time.
Thanks, Linda.
Julian Cribb is a science writer and author of Food or War and the Coming Famine.